welcome to the Arts Show on Near FM. This evening's show is presented by myself, Rebecca Blomfield, and we've got the wonderful Jerry Cooley on the desk. We're not going to be joined by Robbie this evening because he's out reviewing a movie, a new movie that's come out. I think it's a comedy in the Odeon. So we're going to hear all about that in a couple of weeks' time. And we've got a wonderful guest in studio. He's been with Near FM for a very long time, Pat Meehan.
8,000 years, I think, at this stage.
10,000.
Is it 10,000?
Yeah. Feels like
a
eight.
Dinosaur.
I look like 10, don't I?
No, you look very, very young.
Look very young and prosperous.
Nearly as young looking as you, Jerry.
What moisturising cream do you use?
I have no backside in my trousers at the same time. You know yourself, Rebecca.
If you want to contact the show, you can call us on 867 1190. You can text us on 087 69 44 500. And you can have a good look at the back of us and the front of Jerry on the internet if you go into www.nearfm. Right. Well, we're going to talk to Pat Meehan now. Pat, yeah, how long have you been with the radio station? Seriously now?
Seriously, I'll be 16 years in August.
Wow.
Yeah. Jeez. 4 years on CE and the rest of the time on Job Initiative. So, yeah, right. I come in for 1 year, as you do, on CE, and 16 years later, I'm still here. So it's a...
What year did I see you talking to sitting watching the Late Late Show talking to Gay Bourne, or was it Pat Kenny?
1990.
It was on the Late Late Show. Yeah. Gay Bourne, talking about your Shamrogs.
Shamrogs?
Yeah, that was his first one, first book. First situation books, yes.
Yeah. It was children's stuff. But
Is that anywhere? Can we look at that on YouTube or anything?
You can see the 3 minutes.
Yeah, the promo's up there. Yeah, the promo's up there, and
you were helpful with.
Yeah, I put it up there.
Yeah, that's right.
Great stuff.
Animation. So,
the main reason we're here tonight is to talk about Riveting History.
Yeah.
Your wonderful play that's been on. It's been on how many times before?
The first two episodes went out on the dates specified there on the poster, and
so that was. Was it March?
No, give us a look. Just let me see.
Are there the new ones coming?
Yes, but the first two episodes are repeated.
Right.
Right, and they were on last Friday.
They went
Friday.
On the 15th of May and the 22nd, which was two Fridays, the last two Fridays. And the third episode's going out this Friday, the 29th.
Friday.
And the fourth one will be going out on the 5th of June.
And what time is that at?
6 p.m.
Right. I had the pleasure of listening to the first two episodes this afternoon in my house. And I was rolling around the place laughing.
But can I ask you, did you get them on podcast, was it? Or?
To Near FM, but when did you Near FM?
Yeah.
And then down the list, the podcast, Drama.
Yeah. And the two episodes are on there.
Two of them are
there, great, yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Really enjoyed them. And they're not too long. They're around, in and around 30 minutes. One's 37, the other one's about 28, I think.
Yeah, because they're not of equal duration, like 28 minutes, which they really should be to
but
give time
for
them.
It's hard to do that, isn't
it? It is, because when you're writing, you're supposed to write a minute a page if you're writing drama.
Are you?
But sometimes to try and finish a story, it runs over, and you can't cut stuff out because it doesn't run properly then. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So you got to leave it in and hope that it'll get people won't see it.
Yeah, Mark Twain famously said he'd wrote a shorter play if he had time.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Pat, what inspired you? What made you become a writer?
Well, I've always scribbled from the age of about 15, Rebecca. You know, I don't know. I used to get notions about writing things down, and I used to rhyme things. I love rhyming.
Poet.
I wouldn't.
More a limerick type of thing. Yeah.
I wouldn't dream to say anything like poet because I don't know. This poetry has a structure to it, as far as I know, and I wouldn't know what the structure of that was. So I like to rhyme things, and that's fun. So I'd rhyme things and jot things down. And then I went through a period when I was about 19 of writing songs.
Right.
And
because you're a musician as well, aren't you?
You were very obscure.
Right.
Like I was saying, this is Bob.
My lovely horse material, is it?
No, that's... That's Craggy Island stuff, Jerry. Not comedy stuff.
Very
serious, highbrow.
Oh, my God.
Just lyrics that came to me and I wrote them down and said someday maybe if I hook up with a few musicians we might be able to do something. You know, I was 19 and 20 thinking, I could be a songwriter. But it was just another part of being a scribbler, I'd call it, you know.
And did you put any of them to music? Any of the songs that you made?
No, but I tell you, there was a few guys and myself in a band, we ended up doing blues stuff, you know, doing a few gigs playing the blues and stuff like that. And the other two guys, there were two of them, and they decided there was a, this is, they decided that one of them decided there was going to be a ballad revival
right.
in Dublin and in Ireland, and he figured they could make a fortune doing the ballads.
Right.
And that wasn't my thing. Okay. So I said, all right, lads, you go up and do the ballads. And they did, doing the usual, the Abbey Tavern and stuff like that, and a few boozers around town. And that was it.
Right.
So I kind of got left to do, well, you write your little song.
You went your own way.
Yes, okay, yeah, of course. So, you know, that was it. That was, so that was that. But I enjoyed the music immensely. I mean, I love playing the blues and blues harmonica and stuff. Well, I
you do.
Not anymore.
Do you not? No, your son does.
No, I don't have any sons.
Do you know?
Oh.
No, I think you're mixing up with Noel McGuinness.
Yeah, that's Noel. Where are you coming from, Rebecca?
And Noel has hair as well.
I'm doing my research.
Well, I used to have.
You used to have that fringe, Pat. I've seen that fringe.
Did you? Yeah, it was there a while ago. It's gone now. Waved goodbye, I think, isn't it?
Were you organising gigs recently?
No.
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 I just have a mix-up side. I have, Rebecca. No, I'm not involved in that at all. You know, so.
You still get a kick out of listening to your stuff, like if you're sitting listening to it all put together, and there it is, actors and actresses saying your words, and the punchlines that you're hoping for. Yes, they're getting to them and enjoying all that, do you? Will you listen to it back to this?
Yeah, you did.
You still get a kick. You don't get blasé about it.
No, you don't. You can't.
Move on, yeah.
Because when I wrote this stuff, I didn't know whether. I said, look, let's have a go at trying to write comedy. And I'd never written comedy, and I'm not a comedian.
Right.
And I decided, try your hand at writing a bit of comedy and just see if it'll work. And
it's supposed to be very hard to write comedy.
Well, I wrote this stuff, episodes 1 and 2 of Riven History, and the opportunity came along to be able to present it to the near drama group, and
okay,
talking to Paul Loughran, as you
right.
know, about
yeah, yeah,
maybe
yeah.
sound and vision
yeah, yeah.
opportunities. And I asked, would it be possible for the drama group to do a run through with me there?
Oh, lovely.
To gauge whether I was right or wrong in my assumption that it might be funny. And I was really happily surprised that they.
Right.
They
add something
to it.
It's
wonderful to see your work come to life like that.
Yeah, well, they laughed. Mm. And I was secretly saying to myself, oh, yes, it's funny.
Well,
they thought it was funny. It's not everybody's cup of tea, mate.
Oh, yeah,
no,
yeah, yeah.
Can
no
we
writer's
hear it?
Material.
Can
all right,
hear
well, okay,
piece.
I'll shut up for a few minutes.
Well, yeah. Introduce this. This is a Riveting History piece clip. We have it up here, teed up. I'm not sure which.
Can I just say?
Yeah, I don't know which.
I don't even know whether I've heard this. This few minute piece could be from either episode 3 or 4, which hasn't been broadcast yet, and I haven't had the opportunity to hear any of this yet. So this for me is
okay.
Is brand new. If it is from episode 3 or 4.
So welcome to the Art Show. This is Pat Meehan listening to his show Riveting History. Rebecca Bloomfield there on the sidekick there, and we're going to listen to this and see. And you just keep laughing, Rebecca. Remember, laugh.
Lordsman, gathered here in the great hall of Tara. Curb thy squalling and pray be silent, lest I turn my staff into a viper and usher it into the mouth of him who shouts loudest. I, Fardurk, archdruid and counselor to Lyra, request that the king permits me examine these beings who have come amongst us without delay. They have been bound and brought before us this night, and here they stand. We need to know whether demons may be in our midst. Give the order, great king, and I will find out if 'tis so. My magical druid's knife will quickly unseal their lips. I will begin with the small hunchback. His misshapen form more than likely is host to many devils.
Do something to fornicate, will you? I don't want to die. That geezer has a mad look in his eyes. And look at the size of that big black dog beside him. Oh, the stench in this place is turning me stomach. Oh, Mammy, let me wake up. Please just let me wake up.
Oh, I don't want to die either, Professor.
Greetings to you, High King Lyra.
whose illustrious lineage goes far back in the past. 23 generations to Tuchel Chakvar. Your fame will soon surpass that of all of your ancestors. A time is at hand when you will make a decision which will bring great change to all of this land and our people. And the people will proclaim you a great and wise king. Perhaps the greatest ruler this island has ever known. I, Henri du Fornicate, make this prophecy. And it is already coming to pass. For have you not just this very night taken counsel with other strangers? Ah, oui. I can see from your majesty's expression that I am correct, no? Release us from our bonds, great king. I would speak with you in private, for I bring many tidings that only you may hear.
Nay, do not listen to this deceitful foreigner, my lord, with a strange tongue. He only wishes to beguile you. Let me draw out his innards with my knife. In doing so, I may reveal the demon inside him. Aye, we should kill him and his two companions without delay.
Nay, father. Always your talk is of killing. Kill this or sacrifice that. Disembowel him, ravage his mother, then chop off her head, strangle his sister, hang all his children, burn his pig, torture his chickens. Nay, I say, send for another flagon of... Loosen their bonds. I will talk with the stranger. Bring him and the others to my quarters.
But, my lord, I must counsel that I...
Nay! Not you, Father. Abide here in the great hall. Make sure the fires are well tended and organize a feast. Counsel the scullions and see to it that the fullock fear are filled to the brim and ready. Those damn cooking pits take forever to come to the boil if there isn't a constant supply of hot stones for them. Use your magic druid's knife to prepare the meat and don't cut yourself. Where's that ale?
Well,
okay. Now, can I just say that's I haven't heard that before, and that wasn't one of the more humorous pieces in episode 3. But
yeah,
having said that,
There's a lot of historical
fact woven into that particular piece because I've done a huge amount of research,
right?
And I have tried as faithfully as possible to be true to the history.
Right.
Of the periods that I've written about in all the episodes. So with trying to be historically correct, you can't be that humorous all the time. The thing has to be right, of course, and it can't be belly laughs every few seconds in it. You know what I mean? Yeah. So if it doesn't really that gives a flavour of what episode 3 is like, but there's a lot more to episode 3 and episode 4, of course, and that there are some very humorous parts in the two episodes that are going out next Friday and the Friday after.
This character, Professor Henry de Fornicate, where did you get him from?
I honestly don't know. I don't know who any of the characters are, because if you listen to episodes 1 and 2 like you've done, you might get a sense that it's written from a female perspective, because Marion Monroe is a very strong character throughout the whole thing, as is Professor du Fornicate and TCP Crawley, who was instrumental in getting Marion the job with the professor in the first instance. So I honestly can't answer the question that you've asked me, where did it come from? Because I don't know, and I'll tell you why I don't know. Many years ago, I was working on another children's story on my computer one night. This is going back a long time.
Yeah.
And for some reason or other, I write in a solitary sense, on my own, away from everybody,
okay,
if I can do that. And this night, I was working on this children's story, It was a book. And all of a sudden this thing popped into my head. And it had nothing to do with children. It was actually about adults and who were from the period of time in Irish history when St. Patrick had just arrived here.
Okay.
But it wasn't really coming from the Christian perspective. It was coming from the perspective of
pagans,
shamanism.
Okay.
And what happened in this... It was like a kind of a synopsis or a prequel that
right.
I wrote.
Yeah.
In this thing, there were these two twins, right. a brother and sister, who were the epitome of evil.
Okay.
And
this is the children's story.
No, it's nothing to do with children.
This is the idea.
This is a separate thing completely. It just came into my head, and I wrote this down. And there were two adults, brother and sister, who were evil,
right?
Like druids or shaman,
right?
And they fooled the chieftain into giving them his daughter as a, supposed to be an apprentice,
right?
To learn how to use magic so that she could be of benefit to her tribe, mm-hmm. but that was a ruse because they ritually killed her,
right?
And had sex with her at the same time. Now it was very graphic.
Okay.
And then when the chieftain finds out what's going on, he and this Christian missionary go to where the two twins are.
Right.
Chase them into the forest.
For retribution.
Yes. The brother is chased into the forest where he's given a horrible beating at the hands of the chieftain's tribesmen. The sister is taken captive and brutally assaulted by as many of the men as she as want to.
Yeah.
The two of them are then taken to a mound, like a burial mound, and in a pit in the ground, the two of them are bound hand and foot and thrown into this pit. And the pit's covered with a slab, of a stone slab, and they're left there to, they're entombed.
Okay.
So the story then jumps to modern times, and there's a girl who's a student in Cork University, because this all happened down in West Cork. She's an American student studying archaeology in UCC.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And on a day off, she goes out on a field trip. She rents a car, goes out on a field trip to do a bit of exploration and research. She comes across this mound, which is kind of undocumented. It wouldn't be anything like Newgrange or Nowt or Dowt, where it's full. It's nothing like that.
Okay, a rot of some of
the. She goes into the mound and.
Is she on her own?
Yes. She has her monthly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to get graphic about this. Her.
Yeah.
Her issue.
Yeah.
Seeps into the ground where the two
bodies are.
Yes, yeah. And they're regenerated.
Okay.
And then a lot of stuff happens in modern day Ireland. It's a murder mystery and a horror story. All now, I don't know where that came from.
Have you got a name for that one?
I just don't know where it came from.
Have you got a name for it, Pat?
No, I didn't. And I said it to me. I said something right here.
What's the parallel sort of like?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird.
I gave it to my wife, and she said, "Don't write the kids stuff. Write this instead, because this is good." And I said, that's just something that came in, and now it's gone out, and leave it there for now." So I don't.
And
know.
Did you write
that
it?
That answers the question.
Did you write it in the end? That, like that?
Only in here.
Okay.
But in here, and it's still there, but, you know, for another time.
It sounds like, you know, like...
strange stuff.
My wife will always say, in the morning, she'll say, well, like, what was your dreams like? Like, I would be sort of a bit of a dumb dreamer. Like, I don't really dream a whole lot.
Yeah.
Her dreams are all over the place. And she likes Doctor Who. Do you...
I love Doctor Who.
Do you have that sort of insight into things that are going on which are sort of way off the off field and running at the same time? And I'm constantly asking my wife, well, who's he? Where did he come from? Oh, yeah. Remember, he was back there. What's he doing now? I don't have that feel for that. Do you have the
I
feel?
I don't know whether... I can't say yes or no to that, but I don't know whether there's something running along parallel in a sort of an unconscious level, but it's there at the same time. I don't know. Maybe I'm taking all these things in and I'm not... Yeah. Consciously registering, going, yeah, that, but they're seeping in somewhere down here,
and then they come back out at some stage. I don't know.
But I truly believe that there is a parallel world that you kind of in strange yeah. fantasies and thoughts, and you know when you get deja vu.
Yeah, that happens yeah. to me a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. Or, you know, you bump into someone, you know you're going to bump yeah. into them. You thought about someone that day and they ring you, that kind of thing. That's yeah. on that level, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I've encountered deja vu. I'm just trying to think of the storylines and the actual, like, for someone to think that a girl who was out and about on a feed trip and she was going to have her period and yeah. the blood was going to come, was going to seep into the mound and energise
yeah.
people who were dead 1,500 years and, yeah. and the stuff that they did, you know, it's sort of a little bit, well, it's different, you know.
Yeah.
That's, I suppose that's what makes writers who they are.
Yeah,
they write about stuff that no one else even bloody thinks about yeah. until they read it on the page.
Well, isn't that kind of like this riveting history in a way, because it's different in that sense?
Yeah.
And but one of the things you asked me before we went on air at all was about creating new characters.
Yes.
And I answered you that I have to do that, otherwise I think the whole thing would become stale. And yeah. if I was to depend on the three or four principal characters in the storyline, I don't think they could go any place. I don't think, you know, without developing new characters, mm-hmm. that it could go anywhere at all. It would, you know, it would fall flat. And I mean, after two episodes, that'd be it. Like, there would be no series. It would mm-hmm. be just two episodes or three at the maximum, and then it would go no place at all.
So look, we're going to go for our promos. Like, maybe when we come back, just give us a synopsis of Riven History, where it starts, where yeah. it's set, what happens in it. Like give us a rough, like, what time in is it? Medieval? It's way back in pre like you mentioned Tara.
Mm.
It's the High Kings of Ireland type of time,
and it's also set in modern day.
Set in modern day. As well, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about
it. I want to know after the promos as well about how you develop your characters.
Yeah.
So we'll go to the promos and.
And your sort of insight into it, Rebecca. Like, what did you get out of it when you heard the two episodes? What did you think after the two episodes? All right.
Online at near.ie and on air across northeast Dublin. 90.3, this is Near FM.
Hello, you're listening to The Arts Show on Near FM, presented by myself, Rebecca, and we've also got Jerry Cooley on the desk. And we're interviewing Pat Meehan, who is a Near FM broadcaster, engineer, and he's also a writer. Riveting History, we're talking about, we've just heard a little snippet from it, and we're asking Pat where he gets his inspiration from. And where he develops his characters from as well.
Okay, well, I think before the break, Jerry, you asked about doing a bit of a synopsis on the whole thing.
Yeah. Tell us about Riven History. Riven History. Like, what is it about? Like,
okay, you haven't heard any.
I haven't. I've heard the promos for it, so I'm cold on it.
Okay, so have we enough time?
Yeah, work
away.
You just tell me when you want to break and play a bit of music.
Okay,
just tell us what's all about.
It's very warm in here, isn't it?
What's it all about, Alfie?
Okay, I'll start at the beginning.
That's usually
without going into the whole thing in too much depth, because it would take all night. So look, Marion Monroe is a mature student in college who's always broke.
Okay.
She gets a phone call as she's walking down the street, and she answers it, and it's TCP Crawley, okay. who is a fellow student, an ex-fellow student of hers, who has gone on to work in the museum, and now he works in a small radio station called FLM FM. So he asked Marion to meet him because he says he might have a bit of work. He could put a bit of work her way for the summer holidays. She goes to meet him and he tells her about this French professor who's coming to Ireland on a quest, and he's looking for an assistant. And Marion eventually agrees to take the job because the money is so good she can't refuse, and she's always broke. So she goes to the Shebeen Hotel on the Malahide Road and meets Professor Honey de Fornicant.
I wanted to ask you about that. It says Rahini.
Yeah,
I pictured the old Sheeling Hotel came into my head.
I can't mention the name of the hotel.
Could it be based on that? I don't know.
So she meets the professor, and it transpires that the professor is being given a lot of money by certain benefactors who happen to be from the north of Ireland, and their names are Jerry, Peter.
Okay.
And a few others. And they own lots of hotels and businesses in Ireland.
Okay.
And they're giving him a load of money to make the direct link between Cú Chulainn and themselves, a direct lineage.
Okay.
They want him to prove, for once and for all, that they are all the direct descendants of Cú Chulainn.
Okay.
Right, so okay. The professor, Marian decides, okay, I'll take the job, even though she's a bit dubious. She doesn't know whether this guy is an axe murderer or something. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and he brings her outside to the car park and tells her, we will be travelling on Josephine. And Josephine is a big 1,300 square aerial square 4 motorbike with okay. a sidecar attached.
I love.
And there's a great picture of it here.
that's the poster. But anyway, that was done by a great friend of mine, Martin
it's
O'Grady.
Really good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's lovely, yeah.
Who you
I like Marion Monroe.
Martin O'Grady is a great friend of our departed friend Eamon Elliott.
Oh,
the two of them
way,
worked
right.
on the cover and the illustrations yeah. of the Shamrogues book, so
lovely.
That's the connection.
Okay.
But anyway, so the first itinerary is the Hill of Tara. And okay. they arrive on the Hill of Tara at night, and they've been given permission by the border works to camp on the Hill of Tara, which is not strictly what anybody can do, but they have been given this permission. And Duck the Bullets, who was the valet, a little small guy, Dufournacaigh's valet, he cooks a nice supper, and you have all the sound effects like a fire burning and
yeah.
all that, crackling. It's like it's plastic being crushed, but it's there. Anyway, so Professor Dufournacaigh offers Marian a drink from a special bottle of brandy. And in doing so, it causes her to have a vision whereby okay. she sees all these beings in the mist who are from the past.
Okay.
And it turns out that they are the ancestors. And do not be afraid, Marianne. They cannot hurt you. They cannot hurt you.
Okay.
So then they go and have an adventure on the Hill of Tara with okay. back in the past, all that time ago.
Oh, there's the director.
Oh, yes, and I must say that the drama was directed by the wonderful Declan Cahill, who directed
wandered in and out. He's gone in for his high committee meeting tonight.
The Near FM cast.
Okay, so they're having these visions now of these people from the past. They're up on they're drinking
on the
brandy. The three people, the valet, Marion,
yeah.
and the three of them are starting their quest to make contact. Yeah.
Yes, the gist of it is, they've got to find the connection between Cú Chulainn and the lads from the north.
Okay.
But, and the reason TCP Crawley is involved is, I mentioned TCP Crawley.
Yeah, he's
TCP
a radio
Crawley
guy.
Is a presenter with FLM-FM.
Okay.
And he's going to be given the rights to serialise the whole
okay.
trip.
Right.
So, that's what it's all about. But at the end of the day, it's yet to be made known or clear whether the link between Cú Chulainn and the boys up there will be established, because it's still in the writing. It's
okay.
in the process of writing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking at one stage of introducing Mrs. Henri Dufournacaigh and comes to Ireland and says, but that is not my husband. Where is my husband? It is not, he's a stranger, an imposter. I'm not sure I'm working on
okay,
the whole thing.
Okay, so
you know
someone posing as him.
Oh, he could be. I'm not saying he is.
So the lads in the north of Ireland, are yeah. Is this a throwback to the Unionist and Catholic side of things up in the north of Ireland?
Well, Jerry.
Marion
is in the hotel and she's saying to Duck the Bullets, who's taking her up a bit of dinner, who's your man over there with the buck teeth?
Okay.
Well,
well
you
well,
know
I'm
who that
one.
Is.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
then
yeah.
who's the other fella with the pinstripe suit? He's Peter Rutt.
Yeah, yeah. I understand.
So
okay.
it's them. It is them. And they're all in the Irish but not the IR.
Okay, this is a political undertone to this.
Yes,
then.
Of course
oh, okay,
there is.
Okay.
Many
called,
layers.
It's
many
the
layers.
Satire. It's actually the satire. I'm okay. writing satire to take the you-know-what yeah. out of Ireland, basically. Our history.
Yeah.
The politics of it.
Yeah.
There's nothing malicious intended by it. I'm just having great fun doing
yeah.
all this
because yeah.
sometimes the sacred cows need to be looked at, and we need to look at aspects of ourselves and be able to laugh at ourselves.
Yeah.
And basically, that's what I'm trying to do.
Jonathan Swift on it.
You know what I mean? I'm laughing at
yeah.
myself, basically, for writing this stuff in the first place, because I think your head
And you can laugh at us for listening to it. They can laugh at everything.
Of course. Of course.
Tell me, Pat, when you're developing a character, do you go into where they were born, what they, you know, their characteristics, what they look like, what they've done prior
no,
to being
no.
in your story?
No, I don't. I don't look at layers of people's characters. What I do is I write them on the page, and if they look appealing to me and if I think they're funny, I'll just
there and then put them into it, because I don't actually have the time to develop the characters in an abstract sense, mm-hmm. whereby I mean I'm sitting down going, well, she has a white eyebrow and a black eyebrow, or she's got a green eye and a red eye, and I haven't time to do that, or say, well, she's going to be 6 foot tall or she's 5 foot two. I don't have all the time to do that. I kind of go on straight away to have a look. Mm-hmm. And like in episode 5, which I've written and hasn't been even presented yet as episode 5 for the next round of S&D.
I understand, yeah. Like, it hasn't been characterised yet.
No, so I'm
still
looking
in
at
the pot.
Yeah. If I could just refer to one of the newer characters, because I did say that I'm writing new characters all the time,
yeah,
because that's only how
character.
It can develop. Otherwise, it wouldn't work for me.
And another question I wanted to ask you was, you were saying you do it all on the computer. You don't you handwrite notes, but you do most of your bulk of your work on the computer.
All of it, except for notes that I take when I'm.
Okay.
You know. So can I just read this little
yes.
bit?
No,
I'm
going to
just read this as a. I'm not an actor. This is interior, FLM. This is scene 3, episode 5. It's the interior. It's in FLM and it's night time and it says fade up riveting history intro music fade under and his TCP. Good evening listeners and welcome to FLM Radio. I am TCP Crawley, your host on Riveting History, and tonight our studio guests are Zebra Crossan, Paddy Sean Bond Bjog McCoolican O'Dell and Chicken Man. You're all very welcome. So you hear clearing of throats, this is the FX, motor tanks and clucking. Clucking, okay, so TCP. And tonight, ladies and gentlemen, the subject of our roundtable discussion is human mutation and evolution. I will now ask our panellists to briefly introduce themselves and tell us something about what they hope to mutate into. Although, in one panellist's case, I already have a pretty good idea. Next character, Zebra. And she's. This is in an Irish, a Dublin accent, and it's a fella, but dressed up. So... And I'm not going to be able to do this. So I don't mind going first, if that's all right with the rest of you. Right then, I'm Zebra Crossan, and the Z in my name is almost silent, but not quite. Do you get it? Zebra Crossan. TCP. I think I should explain for the listeners that two of our guests are dressed in somewhat unusual garb, to say the least, and Miss Crossan's, or should that be Mr. Crossan? It's Miss, thank you very much. I'm in transition, if you must know, from the male gender to the female, as if it's not bloody obvious. TCP. Very good. Can you now describe for the general public what you're wearing, Miss Crossan? All right, then. Now, what's on me lower half is a pair of real zebra skin trousers, and they're skin tight, as everyone in here can see. On me feet, I've got genuine zebra hoofs, what I bought in one of the African field shops in town. They're encased in these gorgeous platform boots, also made of genuine zebra skin. I never take off the hoofs, by the way, because they're kind of glued to the soles of me feet, and they don't hurt like in the beginning. Me top is, you guessed, zebra skin. Again, it's worn really tight to me body. The whole outfit just gives me the feeling of being inside a zebra. Oh yeah, and me hair is made of zebra mane. But you probably guessed that too, didn't you? And these black and white stripes on me face aren't makeup, they're tattoos. How cool is that? What?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, there you go, that's a new card. That's Zebra okay. Cross. Oh yeah, I've got to get to this bit. TCP.
Is that a
and the name,
now?
Zebra Crossan. Zebra. That's me real name. I changed it by deed poll a couple of years ago. Bleeding right I did. I was worried someone else might get to do it before me. As far as I know, I'm the only zebra crossing in the whole world. So, okay, it's weird.
Yeah, but how do you tie that back to the original premise in the story, that these people are going there to find the linkage between Cú Chulainn, and how do you bring in a radio sort of meeting into the narrative that people are trying to find the route back from these two?
Okay, well that's a parallel thing going on.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, but
like a Doctor Who type
tie
of thing.
In, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. The tie in with FLM, of course, is Marilyn Monroe. She keeps going back to TCP Crawley all the time, and she's becoming more worried and concerned all the time because she thinks the professor's becoming a bit erratic. Because in episode four, they end up back on the hill of Tara, but he's looking for the Ark of the Covenant.
What's which, the
Ark of the Covenant is from biblical times. It's the vessel that the Jews took with them.
Raiders of the Lost Ark, the film.
Do you remember
the
box that he went after?
Yeah,
that's what it is. And there was actually, I did the research, and there was actually a dig on the hill of Tara around the turn of the 20th century, the beginning of the 20th century. Maud Gonne MacBride and a few other people went there to try and stop a group of British Israelis from digging up the hill of Tara to find the Ark of the Covenant. They believed that the Ark of the Covenant was buried on the hill of Tara. So that's all brought into this.
Where did you do this research?
Google.
No, actually, an ex-colleague of mine who is kind of the Jewish persuasion.
I'll go away.
Had a book. Right. And he said to me, Pat, look at this. And I said, that's interesting. Yeah, so I got a read of it. And I said, That there's a story somewhere that'll tie in somewhere with something I might be doing in the future, and lo, that was
there. It pops out again. So it's in the memory banks, and it pops out.
Yes,
to be used.
Put a story away,
very
and
good.
Then it comes out. Yeah. So,
how long does it take to make an episode? As in the acting coming in here and using the.
Well,
studio?
I'm not sure because they do do several rehearsals. That's not really anything to do with me. Once the episodes are presented to the drama group, then they decide on how long it's going to take.
Yeah, the obvious question is, are they ever going to do this live? Would you be envisage taking one episode and saying, okay, guys, put it on the stage, put the set up there and see what happens?
I'd love to do that. Brilliant. I really would. I'd love to do that. You know, but then you're talking about, aren't you talking about another whole area, because you got to go and get a theatre started. I'd love to be involved in that myself, actually.
Yeah, well, like but that's
try it out in a small theatre to start off with, something like The Viking.
Yeah, I'd love to try it.
Like, you could do at the rehearsal. Did you attend any of the rehearsals? So you were already looking at these people in costume and on a set in your head.
Of course.
That's the next stage.
I can see zebra costume, definitely.
Yeah. Because that's so much visual. Like what you're talking about is visual, and that's where people looking at it, you don't have to sort of second guess it. It's right there in front of you, and it's immediately funny to you to see somebody dressed up as a bloody zebra and the Dublin accent.
Well, in my delusional state, sometimes I think, "Geez, would that make television?
Yeah,
would that make TV series?" And then you say, "Yeah."
Well, you know, I've seen like
money. Who'd do that? Look at that.
What's the one?
Brendan O'Carroll's Mrs. Brown's Boys. That's
absolutely
no. The one that I'm thinking of is the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the type of thing that's coming to me. Maybe the lads would do it just because they're always looking for new material. They might just put it on. You don't have to have a massive big theatre. Like I was doing Sage and Stet last week with the Brendan Bean thing.
Yeah,
you can throw it together. A few lights creates the atmosphere. Yeah. Get the costumes.
And I'd love to see it on a stage, even like as you said, episode one or something.
Yeah,
to see how it would translate from radio to the live stage. It'd be great fun. I'd say it'd be great fun for people. You know, I'd love to do
throw in a bit of alcoholic and some hallucinogenic magic mushrooms.
Yeah,
and everyone's there.
Be great fun.
Oh dear God! Is that you driving the motorbike on the poster? It's looking a little bit like you.
I know, Jerry. I can't.
It is a little bit.
Look at the beard on the guy there. I haven't.
Oh, you could have a false beard.
Is it Declan Carl?
Could be.
Yeah.
It's Professor Dufournicay, of course.
I just want to know who Marion is. Where is she?
I think that was just Photoshop stuff. It's great. Martin's great at that sort of thing, you know.
Yeah,
it's really good.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's really interesting. So we're going to listen to their next episode on Friday at 6 o'clock.
Yeah,
and then the fourth episode will be the following Friday, and then you're in the middle. You've written the fifth one, so
fifth one is done. Yeah,
that'll be recorded soon.
Well, no, I'm doing. Have to get episode six done, and then talk to Paul Loughran about making an application for the next round for Sound and Vision,
which is
July, I think.
And you're writing this as a radio piece already. Like, you're not writing it as a short story and then it's been adapted for radio.
No.
Okay.
No. I'm actually considering at some stage down the road if it would...
just to write it straight as a narrative.
Would it work in book form?
That's what I mean. That's the question was asked. Yeah.
I'm thinking maybe that down the road.
Yeah, I think you should, like it's a legacy because sometimes radio plays, they'll be played, but to have it in book form, it's people's imagination are allowed run riot with the narrative and everybody's imagination is different, you know?
Yeah.
People can see things and laugh at different things as you've written them.
I'm thinking
not as you intended.
Somewhere,
you know?
Down the road, if I had the time to do it, because I'm not getting any younger. You know?
Well, there you go, Pat. Mike, what do you say? Gather your flowers as you go. You may not pass this weekend.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Not a rehearsal.
Absolutely. Okay, I've
got
one piece.
Any time for any music?
Yeah, I have one piece of music
but
lined up.
It's been so interesting listening to Pat and getting an idea of. So, to any of our listeners that want to start writing,
he's mad though. He is a bit mad. You have to be a bit mad. Come on, you have to be a bit mad to write stuff like that.
Of course you do.
You have to be mad.
Not just a bit.
What advice would you give to people who are maybe feeling a bit shy about putting stuff to paper, putting pen to paper?
Because you're on your own doing it. There's no need to be shy. There's nothing to be shy of. You're just there with yourself. You're using a computer, a laptop, or you're doing it longhand. Nobody is looking over your shoulder.